Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Rowdy Buddhist. It's so nice to be back with all of you. Today, we're going to talk about a very essential concept that I think is often overlooked because in movements and in ritual and in manners, as we say in Japanese, saho, we tend to just go through the movements rather than understanding the intrinsic importance in that movement and what it personifies and means. I think this is one of the difficulties of transmission to another culture or to another land, because all of these have to or can be shown by other Buddhists, but the explanation, the understanding, the depth is sometimes, depending on the culture, tend not to go into depth or understand the true meaning of it. And I believe in that the connection or the emotional awareness or experience or the experiential understanding is missing. Because I believe, and this is one aspect of modern Buddhism that I think is laxed and perhaps missing, is that when we make each movement, we in the idea of mindfulness or awareness, we understand the exceptional nature and purpose of that movement. And the most essential movement that we have is bowing. That is a prostration to the Buddha when entering or leaving the temple or in the morning at your butsudan or evening. The true meaning of that we should visualize and, of course, deepen our understanding so that when we approach the Buddha, we can with full awareness, with full emotion, with full devotion, properly prostrate ourselves. And I believe in by doing that, naturally that is transferred to our body and mind and spirit. So therefore, the effects of it are quite powerful. And the first thing that I'd like to talk about is the idea of holding the Buddha's feet with our hands. In Japanese, this phrase is said as Zumen Sessoku Kimyorai, which means again holding Buddha's feet in both of our hands. And we see this when we especially practice, do our morning and evening service, Shodaigyo, etc. We bow with our whole bodies, touching the floor as well as the tops of our heads, touching the Buddha's feet and our hands, holding the Buddha's feet up. This is, of course, an essentially important posture for us. And allowing and doing this respectable type posture, we make to the Buddha to show our true intention. And that actually, as I stated, if we understand the meaning with our body and mind and spirit and deepen that, it'll allow us through this posture to abolish our personal arrogance and, of course, selfish nature. Then we are able to be humble enough to and compliant enough and, of course, grateful enough to receive the Buddha's teaching. This is said as Zange Kimyo, which means that when we make a deep and most sincere apologetic resolve, that is, of course, manifested through the idea of bowing, we are able to overcome our past wrongdoings and misdeeds. And we do that through, of course, taking refuge in the Buddha. Zange means this kind of misdeed or wrongdoings that we carry around as like dust on our bodies. So when we humble ourselves and bow before the three treasures, we are able to, of course, remove and through apologetic resolve and humble behavior, we're able to atone for those wrongdoings and misdeeds by our practice of Buddhism, which allows us to then study. This is, of course, a historical example of a cultural aspect, of course, found in India with teachers and students. Here, of course, in the United States, we think of just showing up to class for a student or giving our full attention or just simply being diligent in our practice. But actually, in spiritual traditions as well as in all aspects. A teacher is revered because of the information or experience that they have that we wish to have. So therefore, we, of course, need to begin with a humble mind, as we say in the West, an empty glass. That if we actually approach a teacher with a full glass, it easily overflows and we don't actually learn anything, because we have no capacity. But if we empty ourselves and humble ourselves, then we are able to actually pick up and learn those aspects that we wish to have transmitted from that teacher or from that teaching. We can actually see all through the world examples of this with the idea of early Buddhism. There is some, of course, discussion as to when early Buddhist statues were brought into practice, into use, as far as the idea of Mahayana. But actually, one actual representation of the Buddha, which you may see, is of course the Buddha's footprints. And this comes from the legend of the Buddha, that when the Buddha either stood there or sat there or taught there, the rock or the place in which the Buddha stood became imprinted forever with his footprint. And of course, this was also a symbol of the Buddha. That symbolized his teaching, his enlightenment, and that was carved and cast and painted all over the place as replicas, in the act of devotion. And these footprints actually have a name. They're called Buddhapada. And you may have seen imprints of it, just 2 feet marks side by side, usually on a flat stone. It can also be painted, of course, and even cast into metal. And this is, of course, the symbol of the place of enlightenment and of the Buddha. And it is believed that this was the most earliest version of how the Buddha was worshipped. These humble feet symbolized the grounding and transient nature of reality and reminded the Buddha that the people that the Buddha was divine, but yet was also a mortal that walked this earth, a real man who had footsteps, both literally and metaphorically, and that was something that we could follow. So, in the idea of feet, in many cultures, feet are considered dirty because, of course, many people didn't wear shoes. It's also the bottom of the body, so that also has context as far as positive and negative. Also, the feet were many times unclean, so to humble oneself, to wash one's feet, to wash a teacher's feet, to touch one's feet, was the ultimate act of humbleness. And the practice of representing the Buddha through these types of relics, of course, began in India and at the Buddha's birthplace. So, the touching of someone's feet was to show respect, and that was already commonplace in the previous traditions such as Vedism. Many people, you can see this with the gurus, and also if they approach certain statues of deities, you will see many people, especially in India and in Indian traditions, they will touch the feet. And it's more than likely that the disciples would have done the same as per Vedic tradition, touch the Buddha feet. And of course, after he had passed away, his footprints and the feet were to continue to show the subordinate position and the spiritual hierarchy of the Buddha. So people could still manifest, as we had said, this holding or touching of the Buddha's feet, and to be able to release or make sincere apologies or great resolve, and purify one's past wrongdoings by the symbol. Some of the earliest footprints that they actually have were made a little over a century after the Buddha's death. Asoka Maurya, a Buddhist emperor, King Ashoka, commissioned, for instance, the Great Stupa in the 3rd century BC, and with its carvings, he established the main symbols that we use for Buddhism and what we recognize today, such as footprints, prayer wheels, swastikas, and of course, the lotus flowers. And each symbol was actually linked to the life of the Buddha through his miracles, through the sutras, and were intended not just to be decoration, but to provide focal points for this frame of mind or meditation. So, again, we see the symbolic nature of early Buddhism, especially with the concept of the lotus and of the feet of the Buddha. Many Brahmin texts and later Buddhist texts share with us the 32 characteristics of the Buddha, 31 of them being physical. And this was something that was, again, common in Vedic culture, that there were the 32 characteristics of what we call a great man or an enlightened individual. And many of those aspects of the 32, if you read through the 32 characteristics or aspects of a Buddha or a great man, it relates to the individual or the enlightened person's feet. So, for instance, a great man would have feet with a level sole so that he might touch the ground evenly. This symbolized the idea of an even mind, a balanced mind. So, through the symbolic literary devices or symbols of enlightenment, we were able to understand some deeper teaching. And there are many sutras that go into depth concerning each of these characteristics. The other is that he has a mark of a 1,000-spoke chakra or wheel on the sole. Of course, the fingers and toes are long. Both the palms and soles are soft-skinned and covered with net-like lines. And these ideals that we see in these characteristics were, of course, replicated both in the statue and in the footprint carvings, so that the Buddha would be associated with the symbol of greatness in the eyes of the practitioner. And even through stories from the Buddhist teachings or sutras, suggest that in his life he was physically indistinct from other men, but these enlightened aspects are what distinguish an enlightened being. Especially as we see, these were also symbolic meanings towards aspects of enlightenment. Buddhist monks and of course, practitioners who were well versed in Buddhist philosophy, of course, traveled the Silk Road, spreading Buddhism from India to China and Sri Lanka and Afghanistan. And of course, the symbol of the footprint was distinctive from other traditions and was, of course, easy to replicate in both the rocks and in temple carvings, etc. And as well as paintings, we see this on, of course, the Silk Road. And people would have actually had used it, as we see in many times with Christianity, with the fish. They would use it almost like graffiti to show where someone had been, that that was a place that was touched by the Dharma, by a person, and to remind those that who saw it of the Buddha's message, of course, in an era or place where people may not have been able to have be literate or be able to read. So these important aspects, when we approach the Buddha's, when we approach the altar, when we approach the Buddha in any type of representation, it states to us that we first should resolve our mind before we go into the physical action of bowing. Resolve our mind to understand that we're standing here before our teacher. And then with that mind, appreciate, bring up the great benefits that we have received from the Buddha wholeheartedly. And then once we are in that correct state of mind, then we bow. And that bow or prostration is, of course, with that idea of holding up the Buddha's feet and showing the respect that without the Buddha's teaching, we would be in darkness, we would be without hope or potential, that we would be unable to fulfill our full ability, our full guarantee in our Buddha nature, through our Buddha nature. And that also we're unable to expiate our negative passions, our sins, our zangye, or as they say for the a good translation of zangye would be past wrongdoings, misdeeds, like a dust, which is also a concept of karma. So removing that and purifying the senses, that we do all of this. If you did this, and again, this is something that I, of course, you have to slow down in your practice. You have to make each movement purposeful and meaningful, not just going through the movements and thinking that that is Buddhism, but to be an actively involved practitioner, it makes them so emotionally full, so spiritually full, so powerful, that when you bow each time, you are so happy to be able to have met the Dharma, and that, of course, reinforces it through your sincerity. And when we bow, we have the opportunity to correct ourselves. That's a lot of times why, before becoming a priest or before doing any great activity or training, they would require a certain amount of prostrations to be done as a removal of one's arrogance or emptying of one's cup so that one could actually learn and progress rather than become, being from a place of arrogance and not receiving. So this is, of course, for our benefit as well, and to show our appreciation to the Buddha. So I hope all of you will take the opportunity and time to keep this mind, to think more deeply and be more aware and visualize deeper in your practice and study. And I guarantee that it'll deepen your resolve and deepen your experience and connection with the Buddha and Nichiren Shonin. So I hope all of you are doing well and continue with your practice and study. And I look forward to our next chance to speak. Namu Myoho Renge Kyo.